Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We continue our look at recent developments here in South Africa. As no doubt the world looks on, there has been talks, murmurs of investor jitters because they are unsure of the kind of government that's going to emerge from these talks. They've been talks that have been ongoing for the close on 2 weeks that we've seen now. And when you think you know which way it's going, it seems somebody comes up with something different that creates a different impression. And of course, because there are closed door talks, you'll only get so much as what people want you to know, and with rumors about and obfuscation in terms of trying to ensure that people don't read their strategies, some of these political parties. So we've been speaking to an NFP founder who shared his thoughts on the trajectory that the party is going and disagrees on some of the action, agreeing earlier on with the EFF leader, Julius Malema, saying that the MK should, by virtue of having won the most seats in KwaZulu-Natal, be the one that heads a KZN. And we've seen the ANC also put out its statements on what they said are very tough interviews that they gave their national office bearers, their premiers. They want a capable and ethical leadership, they said. And we are watching where KwaZulu-Natal ends up in terms of the coalition talks, the provincial unity government talks. But speaking of provinces, we are now welcoming Alan Windey, who has been reappointed as the Premier of the Western Cape. A very good evening to you, Mr. Windey, and thank you so much for speaking to us. Congratulations.
Good evening. Thank you very much. It's an honor and a privilege to be re-elected. I don't think, in normal general global politics, getting re-elected is not that easy, especially in these times. So it's a real privilege and a real honor.
I was going to ask you that. Did you go into that confidently because you pretty much got the lion's share of the provincial vote in the elections, but there are still massive challenges ahead, as you said, and getting the people's confidence, even in the election today, were you sure of it, that based on your track record, you will emerge victorious?
Well, I was very proud of the track record, but in politics, this is now the fourth term. So this is my second term that the Democratic Alliance has been in power in the Western Cape. We've been in power for 15 years already and going into the fourth term. Nothing is guaranteed, number one. And number two, I think in this election, it was much tougher than before. There were so many more political parties campaigning and, trying to get their share. So it becomes much, much more difficult. But, I'm really very happy with the results. I retained the 55% that I had 5 years ago. And despite the tough environment, we retained it. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with my own team's capability of retaining the province. But again, as I said, it was very tough.
And there's obviously an expectation for me to ask you this, and I am going to ask you. We'll look at what's happening at national level, the talks with the former governing party. But I want to reflect on, we were speaking with Bosa's leader, Musi Maimane, and we're just looking at the outcome of these elections, and we're looking at various areas. He mentioned the Western Cape, for instance, saying that, and Gauteng, saying there are areas that are rich, there are areas that are poor, that we have to deal with this issue of inequality in a constructive way. You said when you were on the campaign trail that you saw people struggling. Did it change your perspective from the posture that you put out there to people that were doing well in the Western Cape? Did you have a different perspective?
Absolutely. I mean, I look at some of the numbers. We were, just short of 80% of all new jobs created in South Africa in the last 5 years came out of the Western Cape. And in a statistic that came out from Stats SA just before the election, 74% of households in the Western Cape have a salaried earner. In other words, a constant income. 74%, that's a high percentage. But still, when you're on the doorstep, when you're walking door to door, when you're chatting to citizens, you can feel that in the last 5 years, they have become poorer, it has become tougher. And of course, I suppose it is to be expected. We have 0.1% GDP growth rate in South Africa. And, we have an inflation rate that is well in excess of what our growth rate is. So, of course, what happens over time is people do become poorer. So there's no doubt that what I've seen and the cabinet and the caucus, what they've seen, and in actual fact, our whole parliament, as I put it to them today.
So you're
our whole
saying,
parliament has seen a tougher environment.
You're saying 70% of households do have a steady income annually. And are you basing this on your own figures, the census results, and just how up-to-date are they? I ask you this against the criticism posed to you by the ANC, your contemporary that you've just won the position for premiership with, Khalid Sayed, who's saying 83% of the black and poor majority in the province are ignored.
So, yeah, I mean, I then would counter that with saying that, 75% of our budget goes to poor communities. But, I'm honestly saying to you that that 74% is the latest statistic, South Africa stat that came out 3 days before the election that said, and that's not my statistic, that's, Statistics South Africa, a national entity, and it said 74%, the highest in the country, of households have an income. But still, and we're talking about a salary income, so that's not a grant or anything like that. Mm. But despite all of that, I've got no doubt that our citizens are poorer, number one. Number two, we attract 150,000 people every single year to our province. These are people who leave other provinces for whatever reason they leave, but I believe that they come to the Western Cape because they come to look for a job, they come to look for healthcare, or they come to look for education. These are services the province renders. Well, health and education is our constitutional mandate. But people come here. They come here to look for these opportunities, and we welcome them. They're risk takers. They're more likely to play a meaningful part in our economy. But at the end of the day, it still means that the challenge is there. Hmm. So we've got a good track record, but we've got a huge challenge ahead of us.
And I want you to pinpoint what you believe should be your first priorities in those huge challenges. I mean, as you say, there's the good and the bad, and you won't be able to please everybody, but it is down to crunching the figures and actually being able to account the people who there's evidence of that your plans are working. You are lauded for the moves that you made in terms of ensuring that the province's energy is secure, the initiatives that you took. So where are we with those informal structures, for instance, who we can't talk about solar panels, and we know some of the lines are illegal. So let's talk about electrification of those areas in order to reduce. I mean, crime statistics, I believe, have gone up in the Western Cape. Talk to me about some of that.
So of course, that all falls in with our manifesto. And so continually, we say another 800,000 jobs in the next 5 years. How do we really get this economic engine room revving even harder? And it is a key target and focus area, which is safety. Now, safety is not a provincial competence, but I cannot be a premier of a province and then say, well, safety is national government, which where the constitution says the mandate lies. Mm. But we then put a safety plan in place. So, well, we must go above and beyond that. I will fight for policing powers, but in the meantime, how do I put extra boots on the ground? How do I focus on those murder hotspots where the gangsters are actually in charge? And how do we move into those areas with boots on the ground, as well as violence prevention programs, keep our youth in school, to make sure that if there are programs or those that are at risk can be sent to Project Chrysalis, where they can get an opportunity to be brought back into mainstream so that the gangsters don't pull them into a life of crime and drugs. And so those are the interventions in the province around safety. Education and health, those are our big mandates, and we've got to put most of our money in there, which we do. And there are a whole lot of indicators that I'm really proud of, but we're under pressure. When 150,000 people come to your province every year, They don't come here and move into an apartment and go and look for a job. Many of them end up living in informal settlements, and it becomes a bigger and bigger burden on society. We've got to find more and more solutions. We've got one which is called the Better Living Model, and where we have started a pilot project at the Conradi Hospital site, where we've built high-rise buildings with schools, with commercial activity, and entry level up to fairly penthouse expensive apartments, but the entry level enables a school teacher to start their own apartment, and or a government official, or someone with a job can actually get a far easier access to an apartment. And so we've built one now. The second phase, the first was 3,000 units. The second phase is another 1,500 units. And so now this, going into the next term with the mandate from the voters, how can I get not just one of these developments, how can I get six of them or seven of them going up in different parts of the province? So we really start to pick up those numbers. But those are the innovations that I really like to try and bring to government. Don't do the same thing over and over again if you don't get a different outcome or a desired outcome. Try new things, and that's what I believe in. Put money into new things, and let's measure them. And so hopefully the Better Living Model now starts to become really expanded across the province and really starts to make a difference.
So you mentioned earlier on some of the difficulties of provincial governance, saying that because of a national laws. And, part of the criticism that the Western Cape, particularly the DA as the governing party there, has faced is what has been termed almost a secessionist attitude. For instance, Bold One South Africa says, when you look at the daily failure of service delivery, sewage pouring through the streets, potholes and pit latrines, waste pileups, the DA tends to blame a national government. I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. This sentiment that has been experienced by some and seen by some of the DA Western Cape, particularly seeing itself separate from the rest of South Africa.
Okay, so first of all, absolutely not. I do not support the secessionist idea whatsoever. I do support more powers to provinces, but definitely I'm a proud South African. And, we've just tested it. We've had these secessionists. We've had these Cape independence organizations. And, they didn't even get 1% of the vote. So, that's really put that to bed. Mm. They do not get support. But I do believe that where a national government is failing its citizens, like policing, we had 4,000 murders last year. Let alone 27,000 murders in South Africa. Jeepers, if ever a minister should have been fired, that's it. But, so now we put a safety plan in place because it's not our mandate, but it doesn't matter. We'll go and try and make a difference. And, our main mandate is something like education or health. And I have a look at the strides we make in education. I look at a school in Khayelitsha called COSAC, which is now one of the top performing schools in the country, just short of 100% matric pass rate. I look at Mitchell's Plain with a school like Stein Road, which is now in the top 20 schools performing in our province. There's probably between 4,000 and 5,000 learners in a waiting list to try and get into the school because it is absolute excellence. In a poor community, and we've really worked hard at that. How do we enable it in health? And sure, we've got a lot of pressure. We've got a lot of people coming here to look for health services, and they end up unfortunately living in informal settlements, and that is a real conundrum. And I've just spoken about different models on housing. But those very citizens, if I look at the health care that they get in the province, and it's not only the clinics and the basic health care, we also keep pushing the boundaries for excellence. So we're the only state hospitals on the whole of the African continent, not in South Africa, the whole African continent, that now has robotic surgery in two of our state hospitals, because it's about getting innovation and technology in for your citizens. And these are citizens that are not medical aid citizens. These are citizens that are not going to private hospitals. These are citizens coming to government hospitals in our province, getting the best technology and the best service that you can find on the African continent, or actually in the world. So, you know, we really believe on pushing those boundaries for services.
So let me talk about that, pushing the boundaries on services. One of the things that has been raised, and you're speaking about this global profile that the Western Cape has acquired, and we've seen evidence thereof, is the rising rates and taxes because of what has been seen as a lot of foreign nationals who are buying prime land in the Western Cape, pushing out people who believe that they ought to have, you know, the buying power to be in areas that they were born into, that they lived in for years. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay, so, I mean, if you don't have a look at the real statistics on rates and taxes, on the electricity charges and where the thresholds lie, and sure, the economy of supply and demand says that, you know, more people are trying to sell properties in Gauteng and get out of Gauteng, so the prices drop because there's no demand. And more property prices go up in the Western Cape because there's much more demand. That's a basic economic phenomenon. And so, yes, sure, you sell a really valuable house in Gauteng and you can buy a really small house in Cape Town because of that phenomenon. But we also have the highest value property for zero rating of property tax. We have the best threshold when it comes to indigent policies between all of the metros in South Africa. And so, and we spend more on infrastructure than, and Cape Town spends more on infrastructure than three, four of the biggest metros put together. So, I mean, it's not, and sure, there is cost differentials, but we also make sure that those ceilings are raised and that our citizens in the poorer communities get a much better return and indigent policies and you know, making sure that they get the reductions and the discounts compared to any other metro in South Africa. And, of course, it's much easier to do that because we've got a growing economy, because we've got a reducing Gini coefficient, because we've got jobs in our households, and it makes a difference.
Okay.
And, of course, we've still got a long way to go. But, you know, you can see that it makes a difference when you measure city for city.
So one of the biggest challenges facing the Western Cape, it's been dubbed, you know, the mafia crime, drug-related capital of South Africa. I mean, drug-related crime, I believe, went up by a huge amount, 50.2%. What is your plan going forward? People are living in fear. Random acts of crime where young children can't even walk the streets or be near their houses, and are shot, kidnappings regarding human trafficking. It all just seems like a very scary place to be, as we say, gangster's paradise.
So I must say one item which is not, we cannot show that it is part of us, is that's human trafficking and kidnapping. I mean, that number has come down dramatically with J.P. Smith in the city of Cape Town and our Metro Police and law enforcement officers. But of course, you know, again, crime, policing, the criminal justice system is not a provincial or a municipal competency. It is a national competency. I will continue to fight to say, give us that power. But we have invested in boots on the ground in the province. It's not our competency, but we've done it. We put LEAP officers in place. We use eye in the sky. We use body cams. We use drone technology. We use camera systems. We use our health data to deploy our officers because it's much more reliable than police data. It is not the mandate of the province.
And I hear you say that, but by your own volition, you said you can't just fold your arms, you can't wash your hands.
Exactly.
So let's focus on what I've been doing going forward. So, yes.
But that's what I've been doing. I've been putting LEAP officers in the murder hotspots. Mm. Still, South African police today deploy less officers per 1,000 population ratio in those murder hotspots than the leafy suburbs of Cape Town. They do not put the police officers where they should be put, where the crime rates are the highest, where those children have to duck and do their homework under school, under the dining room table because of stray bullets.
Right.
The police don't do that. But we deploy our LEAP officers there. We use that technology. We've just built a forensic pathology lab. Specifically, it is, you know, you'd see it on the movie, CSI. That happens. The only one on the African continent has now been built next to Tigerberg Hospital, specifically to deal with these crime levels, because it is not our competency, but we will get involved.
Okay, I don't want to belabor that point because we have run out of time, and I do want to ask you this. Progress on the Government of National Unity talks, as we've been told, particularly the DA stance at the moment, is it all coming together? Are you in agreement about your role as a Democratic Alliance, and what is it?
Okay, we don't have a final position as yet. I'm actually on the negotiating team, but I had to step out of the negotiating team for getting the province elected and the cabinet put in place. But as we speak, they are still in discussions around these negotiations. There are obviously areas where we're going to say we have to walk away, and hopefully we don't have to walk away.
Such as?
Actually find the best solutions. You know, we've set those parameters. I can't really speak out of that committee.
Okay.
But we've set those parameters. They're part of the negotiations. We're still in it, and I sincerely hope that by tomorrow we reach a solution that's in the best interest of the citizens of South Africa.
Re-elected Premier of the Western Cape, Alan Wundi, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. It is just about 24 minutes past nine. We continue with Point of View here on Kaya 95. Now, remember, you can call us 086-00-00-959.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.